What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Down to the Wire. Mason, we have two more recordings counting tonight until football season's here, man. We are grinding it out. Week zero starts this weekend, even though there really aren't any enticing football games to watch. But at least it's a little college football. I mean, you know, we're getting there.
I continue to be in disbelief of your hate of week zero. I mean, dude, Vandy in Hawaii, come on. Let's be real.
Game is Vandy even going to have their stadium finished?
No. I think they're working on both end zones at this point.
You know, you would think that people at Vanderbilt, you know, with them being so smart, that they could figure this out to make sure their stadium is done before the start of the football season. But apparently they aren't that smart.
Okay, look, so, hilarious move by Vandy to not have their stadium complete. So they're going to have, like, friends and family there only, probably no fans, and yet they're going to give half of the earnings to Hawaii for the Maui stuff. So pro move there. Hats off to Vandy.
Big brain moves from a big brain university, apparently, you know? They totally saw this coming.
Yeah.
So dumb. If there is any game that might be remotely interesting, would be Navy Notre Dame, because that, you know, pesky triple option crap that the service academies do. LSU gets to deal with it playing freaking Army this year for some reason. But
I'm actually a little interested in that game just to see how Sam Hartman's going to fit in. I mean, I know Notre Dame's probably going to murder them, but at the same time, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Hartman.
So that's week zero. I mean,
breakdown. There we go.
Broken down. There you go.
USC's going to win by 60. We'll throw that out there too, and that's about it.
By 60? That's a little aggressive.
I think they're going to be aggressive, if we're being real.
Listen, okay, now you got me interested. Let's look at the Notre Dame Navy.
That's all it took. 60 points.
That's all it took. And going 60, like, I don't know about that one. Ball history.
My guess is USC's going to come out and try and absolutely goose San Jose State. They're going to try and limit them to 0 points.
So, okay, the past couple years, there's been Notre Dame's come close to a 60 bomb. They won, but it was close last year. They won 35-32 last year. Then the last couple the years before that, they kind of blew them out. Notre Dame won 34-6 in 2021. They didn't play in 2020 for COVID bullcrap. In 2019, they won 52-20. In 2018, they won 44-22. In 17, they won 24-17. And they actually lost in 16. They lost 28-27. They have, I mean, within the past years, I mean, in 2011, they scored 56 and won 56-14. In 2012, they scored 50 and won 50-10. So I guess it's not super out of the realm of possibilities, but I don't know, man. Like, 60's a lot, and it's week zero, so you're still not, like, fully going?
Well, look, if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be USC, okay? I could totally see them doing it.
USC putting 60 on San Jose State?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that's easy.
I can definitely see that.
Notre Dame on Navy, I don't know about that.
Oh, no, I'm saying USC is going to put up 60, not Notre Dame.
Oh, okay.
If Notre Dame puts up 60, my world will end.
I think USC could get close to 70 if they. I think they can name their score. Hey, we want to go score 100 points. They could probably go score 100 points.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, the news is getting slower, thank God, because we're not talking about stupid conference realignment anymore with the season coming up. So the news that's come out this week is the AP preseason All-American list has come out, which is fun. So two teams, first team, second team for offense and defense. So we'll go ahead and go through that real quick for you guys. And I think for a first team offense, starting with the quarterback, this is really no surprise to anybody if you pay attention at all to the sport. It's obviously Caleb Williams from USC, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, going for the two-peat the first time since, what is it, the Ohio State running back. Remind me his name.
I cannot do that because I'm blanking on it too.
Heisman repeat winner.
Archie Griffin.
There it is.
He's the only one, too, isn't he?
He is the only player that's won twice. Oklahoma is the only school to have back-to-back winners. Okay. So just a little trivia there for you.
Yeah.
And who would those back-to-back winners be, Mason? Do you know?
From Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Is it Baker and Kyler?
It would be Baker and Kyler.
You're hey, right, look man. At that. Trivia look at master. You. My mother would be proud.
Oh, man. So Caleb Williams trying to be the first player to win back-to-back Heisman trophies since Archie Griffin. And that was back, when was that? That was a while ago.
74 is my guess. 74.
Let's see. 74 and 75. Look at you. Look at you being dang. Close on that, dude.
What is happening right now?
We need to like sign up for like college football trivia or something with you and go win some money or something. I don't know.
Let's do it. Sounds like a blast.
Oh, man. So, okay. So that was quarterback Caleb Williams trying to repeat as Heisman, and he is the first team quarterback. The running back positions, we have Blake Corum from Michigan, which I think is no surprise. And then Quinshon Judkins, sophomore from Ole Miss, was a stud last year for Ole Miss, came out of nowhere as a freshman. And then we're getting to the offensive line. So at tackle, we have Joe Alt from Notre Dame and Alu Fashanu from Penn State. At guard, we have Cooper Beebe from Kansas State. And at guard, we have Zach Zinter from Michigan. Center is Cedric Van Pran from Georgia. At tight end, no surprise, Brock Bowers. And then wide receiver, this one's a no-brainer as well, Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. The other two, I'm a little surprised at who is picked for first team above at least one player that we'll get to after we go through the second team. But at wide receiver two, Rome Odunze from Washington, and I don't know if I said his name right, but you know, that's what it is. The other wide receiver three was Amika Egbuka from Ohio State. So two Ohio State wide receivers taken of the three wide receiver spots. At all purpose player, Travis Hunter from Colorado. If anybody knows, this guy was the number one overall player in recruiting last year or 2 years ago, whatever that class was, that signed with Prime to Jackson State and then transferred to Colorado. He plays corner and kind of plays both sides. I don't know if he returns punts or not, but so that might be why he's all purpose. But he's all purpose. Kicker is Joshua Cardi from Stanford, the only Stanford player that'll ever be on this list anywhere at the end of the year. On defense at edge, we have Jared Verse from Florida State and Braylon Trice from Washington. Interior defensive lineman, we have Zerzan Newton from Illinois and Dante Corleone from Cincinnati. The three linebacker spots, Harold Perkins at LSU, Jason Dumas Johnson from Georgia, and Tommy Eichenberg from Ohio State. The two cornerbacks we got is Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama, which I think is no surprise, and Kalen King from Penn State. The two safeties that we have is Cam Kitchens from Miami and Malik Starks from Georgia, super sophomore there. And then the third defensive back is Cooper DeJean from Iowa and the punter Torrey Taylor from Iowa. So Iowa getting two spots there at the end on the All-America team. What you think about that, Mason?
Not deserved. Get it out of here. Also, don't get me started on Iowa. I can't with Iowa. Okay. After last year, I just can't. I need a good year break from Iowa.
I knew that would get you going. All right, let's get to the second team. The second team quarterback, and there is a lot of options here for quarterback, but they went ahead and went with Drake May from North Carolina. At running back, Raheem Sanders, or Rocket Sanders, you might have heard, from Arkansas. And the second one is Braylon Allen from Wisconsin. The two tackles, J.C. Latham from Alabama and Kelvin Banks from Texas. The two guards being Donovan Jackson from Ohio State and Christian Mahogany from Boston College. At center, Zach Frazier from West Virginia. Tight end, Orandi Gadsden from Syracuse. And then the three wide receivers, you have Xavier Worthy from Texas, Malik Nabers from LSU, and Jacob Coing from Arizona. All purpose, you got Will Shipley, the running back at Clemson, and kicker of John Hoyland from Wyoming. Honestly, with these punters and kickers, I feel like these AP voters just like pick some random guy half the time in the preseason. It's like, all right, let's get this guy. Why not?
Wyoming. It's always a dart throw. It's just it's really hard to pick preseason stuff. So you pick based off of what happened last year, which is very obvious with this. Xavier Worthy being second team does kind of surprise me a little bit, especially being the fact that Ohio State got two guys on first team for wide receivers. But yeah, like it's just kind of pick your poison and then go from there.
Yeah, Xavier Worthy definitely should have been first team. No doubt about it for me. But we'll go to defense real quick. At edge, we have JT. Oh, I'm going to butcher this. Tui Malau from Ohio State. Do you know how to say that?
No. Okay. I'm glad you're trying it.
And then Dallas Turner from Alabama. Interior D lineman, you have Tyler Davis from Clemson and Makai Wingo from LSU. The three linebackers, Jeremiah Trotter from Clemson, Barrett Carter from Clemson, and Cedric Gray from North Carolina. ACC represent, mainly Clemson there. Okay. Cornerback, you got Josh Newton from TCU, Ben Morrison from Notre Dame. At safety, you have Kalen Bullock from USC. USC having a all-American defensive player? What is this? And then the other safety being Javon Bullard from Georgia. At defensive back, you got Will Johnson from Michigan, and then the kicker, Kai Kroger from South Carolina. And that's it.
Cool.
Those are your All-American teams. Some of those names are impossible. You know, one of these days, I'm just going to have you actually read off these lists so you actually say the names. So I can listen to you butcher them.
Look, I'm dyslexic, so that would be a dumpster fire. It wouldn't be great podcast.
I think it'd be great. I think it'd be great entertainment, actually. Any other thoughts on the All-American teams? Is there anybody that you thought maybe you should have been moved up or should have at least been on any team?
My guess is that they get exactly four of those right total for all three teams. By the end of the year, maybe four.
maybe four. I mean, if anybody is missing on the list, and this is just because I'm a homer, it's Mason Smith. I understand why he's not on there, because he was hurt last year. But
yeah,
I mean, come on, guys. Let's
see that. That's somebody who will be on there by the end of the season for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the All-American list. Let's go ahead, and we mentioned last week at the end that this is going to be a little bit more player-centric, which it is going to be at the beginning, and then we're actually going to finish it out with some playoff talk and predictions there. So let's keep going, and let's talk Heisman dark horses. Obviously, we know who the favorites are. Caleb Williams, you got Jaden Daniels, Quinn Ewers, Jordan Travis. We have all those guys, but let's kind of start talking dark horses. Who are a couple of dark horse Heisman candidates in your opinion?
Honestly, I do think that Drake May has a chance to win the Heisman this year. I think the problem with that is the Heisman focuses a lot on wins and losses kind of by the end of the season. I don't think North Carolina is going to be in a situation where they're going to win enough games to put Drake May in that conversation. But I think numbers-wise, he's going to have a really good year. And if he can propel them and get those wins needed for the Heisman voting, I do think that he is definitely a dark horse So that would be my first one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's a good pick. It would have to be one of those RG3 years.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Where he's just like his team might not be the best, but his play is just so undeniable. And he, you know, let me pull up North Carolina's schedule real quick, just so we can look and see at his possible quote unquote Heisman moments.
Yeah.
Because one of the big ones for RG3 was Oklahoma. Yeah. So let me go ahead and pull them up.
And I really do think he has the talent to do that. Like, he showed it last year that he could be a guy that puts up big numbers. But there were times last year where the big numbers didn't contribute to wins. But I don't know if all of that was on him or most of it was on how bad their defense was last year.
Sure. I mean, looking at their schedule, I mean, again, it is the ACC. So you don't have a ton of name brand recognition schools that are really up there for them. They don't play Florida State. They don't play Notre Dame. I mean, the one, if we're looking at least the preseason rankings, the one team that they play is Clemson, and that is towards the end of the year. It's November 18th. It's at Clemson. You know, if he balls out all year and then goes to Clemson and has a Superman game, whether they win or not, to me, as long as he goes out there and they score 50 points, whether they win or lose, but he's the guy and it just ends up that Clemson had the ball last and they won. Like, that's, to me, that's enough of a Heisman moment to get him the bump. And then assuming, of course, he doesn't crap the get bed the next week against NC State. I mean, that's the moment right there. So I think kind of schedule wise, when it comes to when you play Clemson, I think is huge for Drake May this season, but he's got to start early against South Carolina,
yeah,
and then just carry that on the rest of the year. So he has a good opportunity to really kind of start off with a bang against South Carolina because it's 6:30 on ABC, so tons of eyeballs. You blow up there, you win. That is a good kind of starting trajectory for this year after he had buzz last year as a true freshman, and he's just got to carry it all the way until November when he plays Clemson.
And that's kind of the thing that happened with Caleb Williams last year. Like, he started off, I don't want to say he started off slow, but it took him a while to actually get into the conversation for the Heisman. And to me, like, I was sitting here saying all last year, CJ Stroud, CJ Stroud, CJ Stroud, like, this is his award to lose. And of course he lost it. And honestly, like, I could see a situation like that happening again this year. Because I feel like it's kind of clumped at the top with guys who could be awesome this year. Also, you really have no idea. And so, yeah, like I definitely could see Drake May sneaking up into that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. My guy is Joe Milton. I mean, when you look at the odds for the Heisman, at least, I mean, he's way further down than Drake May. I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's 7 spots down from where Drake May is, and Drake May is at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's 7. So, I mean, he's at 14 as opposed to Drake May at 7. And Joe Milton, for Tennessee to do what I think they can do this year, he's got to be Mr. Heisman. He's got to be the dude. He's got to put up numbers like Hendon Hooker did last year, and he has all the physical tools and all the physical ability to do it. He has weapons on the outside. He's in a system that will give him the numbers, and he's in a conference that's going to give him plenty of recognition and plenty of eyeballs in the SEC against quality competition this year. He starts out ABC 11 a.m. against Virginia. He could easily ball out there to start eyeballs, kind of like we were talking about with Drake May. He goes to Florida a couple weeks later. That's on ESPN primetime. And then, I mean, you have games in the middle, and then you have a game at the end. I mean, you have Texas A&M and Alabama at Bama. You perform in those games, and then you have Georgia at the end. To me, for him to be able to win it, he has to win either at Bama or he has to beat Georgia. I don't think he's in the same position of just being able to, hey, win or lose your one key game like a Drake May. They just have so many key games that he's got to be the guy to win one of them. He wins both of them, I think he's a lock. But he just has a good bit of opportunity. So he would be my dark horse. And I think, again, I think the schedule kind of sets up for him. It's just he has a little bit more pitfalls because of the competition. But if he rises up to the occasion, I think he could easily win it.
Okay, so I completely agree. I think Joe Milton has a chance to be really good this year. The thing that's kind of getting me right now about Tennessee is the fact that they lost as many guys as they did. They had a first-round tackle, I think it was, that went in the draft this year. You lose your two best wide receivers. So it is going to be kind of a growing process, I think, for the first couple games this year with Tennessee. But with his talent, his arm, or his ability to throw the ball, he is very athletic. Like, I could see a world where by the end of the season, he is coming on a lot stronger than he did to start the season. Looking at Tennessee's win total right now, I think it's Vegas has it set at 9.5. So that, like, if you're betting the over on that, you're basically saying that they're going to beat one of Tennessee, or they're going to beat one of Georgia or Alabama. And honestly, I think if you get one of those games and you're putting up similar numbers to what Hendon Hooker put up last year, like, you got to be in the conversation at that point. But yeah, like,
well, if it's 9.5, they can actually lose both of those games. They just have to win the rest of them. Like, get them at 10-2, losing to Bama and Georgia. So I think it's more, at least more, as long, if we're just going off of preseason rankings, they just need to win one of A&M, Bama, Georgia. To win the 9.5, and you could throw in South Carolina there because they were like right on the edge on making a ranking. So hey, you got to win 2 of 4 of those four, and still get the over.
I think if he is even like 80% of what Hendon Hooker was last year, they're going to be really good this year. So like,
for sure,
to me, Hendon Hooker just put up an insane season last year before he got hurt. So if he can get close to that same production, he is definitely going to be a dark horse.
Yeah. And when it comes to Tennessee as a team, I mean, I think we kind of talked about this in our East preview. If you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen. But when it comes to Tennessee as a team, it's all going to come down to their defense. Like it has the past couple of years, their defense improves. I mean, their defense last year took a good leap from the year before. If they take another big leap, then they're going to be really dangerous. So what else you got for Heisman dark horses?
All right. So what if I told you this has never happened with the history of the Heisman Trophy? Okay, so think dark, dark, dark horse. And that is a tight end winning the Heisman. Okay.
Going with Brock Bowers.
I think we have to at least mention Brock Bowers as a dark horse. Because let's be real. Last year, he had 63 catches, 942 yards, 7 touchdowns. Really good season out of a tight end. Okay. If he adds a little bit to each category, let's say he gets up to like, let's say he has 10 catches, 73 catches. Let's say he gets to like 1,100 yards and like 12 touchdowns. You can't leave him out of the conversation at that point. And he's got it set up really nicely right now where he is the face of the offense at that point. He doesn't have a quarterback. That's kind of what the problem is with somebody like, I don't know. I'll just say Xavier Worthy. Like, Xavier Worthy is not winning the Heisman because if he has a great season, that means Quinn Ewers is having a better season. So Quinn Ewers is going to get that award.
And unless this is a stupid, crazy COVID year where we just want to throw a wrench in everything.
We'll see. I was about to bring that up.
Have a throwaway thing.
If you look at when Devontae Smith won the Heisman, it was Mac Jones coming in as his first year as a starter, kind of an unknown. So when Devontae Smith is putting up an insane season, it looks better on him than it does necessarily Mac Jones. And so that's kind of where you can open the door for somebody like that. And that's also can be said for Marvin Harrison Jr. If Marvin Harrison Jr. is having a great season, he's going to get a bigger bump in the Heisman than their quarterback's going to get. And so I just think that like you have to at least mention Brock Bowers in this conversation as a dark horse. I know it's never happened before. A tight end winning the award, but look, it's a dart throw. Why not?
I mean, you got some good odds here, Mason. If you want to put down $100, the odds that I see right now are +6,000. There's a +6,500, and there's even a +6,600. So, if you put a bet down on Brock Bowers winning the Heisman right now, on what is that MGM? then you would win $6,500 or $6,600 on a $100 bet if Brock Bowers won the Heisman. Now, you know, why not just throw away a $100 bill? Why not throw away a Benjamin just for kicks and giggles on Brock Bowers?
It sounds like a new car right there because of Brock Bowers.
I mean, some players that are around him in the betting market. He's below KJ Jefferson. He's below Spencer Rattler. Okay. He's below Ty Simpson. Okay. So, I mean, the betting market is crazy. Like, it just doesn't make any sense sometimes, but definitely going on a dart on a limb there. I can respect it. I can respect it.
So he's a dark horse for a reason.
He is a dark horse for a reason. You want to talk about a legit dark horse though, Mason, something that hasn't happened in forever. It feels like, I don't think this position player has ever won it, as well. And that's Harold Perkins, man. Like, what do you mean?
Okay. God,
listen, if you're going to be on this all hype last year for Will Anderson, we're going on the hype train.
Right.
We're going on the hype train with Harold Perkins. He was the best player on the freaking team for LSU at the end of the year last year. He's playing middle linebacker. He's going to be everywhere. He's going to be rushing the passer. If he does what he did against Arkansas, if he does that a couple of games and just wins the game a la Honey Badger in 2011, like, he's at least invited to New York. And then, depending on who else is there, depending on how the rest of the season goes, freaking give it to him. All right?
Look, I learned my lesson last year that a defensive player will never win the award. So, just by the end of the season, your bubble's going to be popped too, and we'll be in the same boat. So I'll let you have your moment right now.
Listen, I'm not sitting here white knighting for him like you did Will Anderson last year. I'm not sitting here saying he absolutely should win the Heisman. No one else. We can go back and play the tapes. Okay?
I don't think I said that exactly. I think that might be a bit of an exaggeration.
You totally went for it, which is fine. I mean, listen, it's fine. But let's not compare and just say that I'm doing the same thing here. Okay,
I had to live my truth last year.
Huh?
I had to live my truth last year.
Live your truth. Let me see if I can even find odds on this guy. Let me see
if I can find him.
Malik Nabers is at plus 9,000 and plus 15,000. Where is he? He's got to be on this list. Somewhere.
I do not see him on anything that. Okay. I just found it. On FanDuel, he is plus 15,000.
Yeah, he's got four plus 15,000s and a plus 10,000. The plus 10,000 is on Caesars. Everywhere else, DraftKings, FanDuel, MGM, and whatever this one is. What is this? Points Bet? Never heard of it. he's at plus 15,000. So
he currently has worse odds than, let's see, Talia Tungabailoa, my guy. Yeah, okay. Look, I'll let you live in your moment. So
just let me have this, Mason, okay?
That's a dark horse. Great dark horse. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Is there any other dark horses that you have, Mason?
I wouldn't say dark horses, but I think you do need to look at Bo Nix. I think he has potential to, like, I kind of talked about it last week. I think he's going to have a really good year. Like I said earlier, Marvin Harrison Jr., he's going to have a chance just because he's going to be awesome this year. Yeah, that's about all I got at this point.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and move away a little bit from the Heisman conversation, and let's just talk about players that we're kind of keeping our eye on, players to watch. We're obviously going to go over a couple players on our own team, so I'll go over a couple players on the Little Shoe side. You'll go over a couple players from the Bama side. And then we'll kind of maybe go national, try and think of some players that people should look out for, whether they were players that we just kind of read off of the All-American list that we talked about, Heisman, or even just players that we haven't talked about at all and that we think might have a good year. So let's go ahead and start with that, Mason. So why don't you go ahead and give me some players on the Alabama roster that everybody should keep their eyes out on?
Yeah, so for me right now, all reports coming out of camp is that the quarterback battle is insanely crazy, which keeps my mind in a tizzy right now. I hate it. And the wide receivers have kind of been struggling with drops. So a guy I'm keeping my eye on right now is Amari Niblack. I don't really know how to say it. I think it's Niblack. It's either Niblack or Niblack. I can't read. but I'm keeping my eye on him. He's coming in as a sophomore. He's a tight end. He's insanely athletic. He has good hands. He played a little bit last year. He wasn't able to make a huge impact just because he was behind Cam Latu the whole season. He's coming in this year. I think he's going to have a good season. If you look back in the past with Alabama tight ends who have actually had really good success for the team, it's been guys like O.J. Howard, Irv Smith Jr., like two guys that are insanely athletic and can also block at the same time. And that's kind of where I see Amari Niblack. So I think he has an opportunity to step up this year just because of kind of the weird situation that we're at with our wide receivers right now. And if he gets this opportunity, I think he's going to shine, and I think he's going to be really good this year.
Okay. Anybody else?
On the defensive side, it's kind of hard, if we're being honest. I want to say Caleb Downs, but at the same time, he's a freshman, so I feel like that's kind of cheating the question as somebody who can break out. but I think he's going to be awesome this year too. I mean, like, if you're a true freshman starting at safety for Alabama, you're going to be doing big things at some point. So I would say him, but another guy I would like to mention is Deontay Lawson. He's coming in this year. We've kind of been, I don't want to say weak at linebacker, but not necessarily as strong as we have been in the past. Henry Toto kind of ran the middle of the field last year and the year before that. I don't want to say he was a bad linebacker, but at the same time, it wasn't like the dominance that you got like out of Rolando McClain, CJ Mosley, like all types of guys like that. I think Deontay Lawson has a chance to get us kind of back to where we were in the middle of the field before the last couple of years. He's insanely athletic. He's a big hitter. As long as he catches on to the defensive schemes that Kevin Steele is putting in, I think he's going to be able to run the middle of the field for us. So I am looking at him to have a big year. Another guy I'll mention is Chris Braswell. He was kind of pushed under the rug a little bit for the past two seasons at this point, honestly, because he was playing behind Dallas Turner and Will Anderson. And it's kind of hard to crack a rotation with those two guys on the field. So him coming off the edge, I think he's going to have a good season because he's been kind of underrated, in my opinion. He's a really good pass rusher, and having him alongside of Dallas Turner, who's going to be getting majority of the focus from offenses, I do think that Chris Braswell is going to be able to kind of take a leap this year. And so those are definitely three more guys that I'm looking out for.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and get to some LSU guys to look out for. I think the obvious answer for that, at least on the defensive side of the ball, is Mason Smith, just because he was injured last year. Former five-star, all-world recruit, all-world player. Whenever he was playing as a freshman, he played both inside and outside in a 4-3 scheme, which is freaking crazy. I mean, the guy's a monster. Now being back in the 3-4, he's going to be playing that inside defensive end position, and he's going to blow stuff up. I mean, the word out of camp last year heading into the Florida State game was he was the best player on the team. And then he blew out his knee in a freak injury in the game, like first series last year, which really put our defensive line in a tailspin. It ended up playing out well, and Makai Wingo really kind of anchored it down. But he's the guy to watch. He's going to be, at the very least, all SEC defensive player at the end of the year, and is going to be pushing for All-America. And I wouldn't even be surprised if he's a first-round pick after this year, because he's that talented. So that's a guy to watch out. It's going to be big number zero. You will not be able to miss him at all on your TV screen. Big number zero coming at you. Staying on the defensive side, another player, and this is a guy that has played a ton of football, and that's Greg Brooks, safety. He's going to be playing. We're probably, with how the defensive backfield is looking right now, we're probably going to be playing a lot of three safeties look, and he's going to be really playing that nickel role out of anybody. Number three, he played really, really well last year, and he's going to play really, really well this year. He's always around the ball, big hits and everything. Watch out for him. And then on the edge for the defense, We lost, obviously, BJ Ojulari. So it's a big kind of shoes to fill on the edge when you lose a guy like that. But the guy that's going to be taking the role is Savion Jones. He's a junior. One of the things that he needed to work on last year was being able to defend the run. He was pretty good at pass rushing, and words out of camp is that he's looking great and playing really well, so watch out for him on the edge. Now switching over to the offensive side, I know whenever we talked about our SEC West preview, whenever you got done kind of previewing, I mentioned at the wide receiver position to look out for, and now I just lost his name. How did I? Kyren Lacy. Watch out for Kyren Lacy, but another player at the wide receiver position that you want to look out for, and you should be pretty familiar with him, Mason, is Aaron Anderson.
Don't say it.
Aaron Anderson.
Don't say it.
Listen, I think this is a great trade. I mean, you guys could have took off the bum of Eli Ricks from us, and we just took, you know, Aaron Anderson from you. I think it's a pretty fair trade. He's going to be our Swiss Army knife. A lot of people are talking about, hey, he's going to be like the Tyreek Hill role in this LSU offense. Just get him the ball in space and he's going to be everywhere.
If he does anything this year, I'm going to be so depressed.
I'm pretty sure he's going to be doing a lot for us on offense, Mason. So,
okay, well,
you know, you just go ahead. Just go ahead and prepare yourself mentally for that.
Will you be prepared for my feelings to be hurt on here when that happens?
What's going to happen, Mason, if after the Florida State game we get on here to do a podcast and he like goes off for like two touchdowns? Like what?
I'm going to need just a quick moment of silence at that point. Some crickets, and some violins playing. That would be tough. That would be a tough pill to swallow.
Oh, man. And I know I keep bringing up wide receivers on the LSU side, but there's just so many. But it's also because we don't have that absolute number two really solidified yet. Because we have, obviously, your number one is Malik Nabers. I mean, there's no question about that. The number two is, okay, is it Kyren Lacy? Is it Brian Thomas? Could it be Aaron Anderson? Maybe it's a freshman of Shelton Sampson. But another guy that you need to watch out for, and nobody has really seen him because he's just been injury prone. He's just been injured a lot the past couple of years. He really just couldn't get on the field, is Chris Hilton. He might not play every single play, but he has lightning speed. I mean, this is a guy that ran 100 meters in high school, track athlete. He's just been dealing with injuries, so hasn't been able to get on the field. He's finally healthy and playing, having a really good camp. And so this is going to be the guy that would take the top off of a defense. And so he might not have a ton of catch receptions this year, but he's going to be the guy that's like, okay, we're looking for a big play. Just have Chris Hilton run a go route or a post or a quick slant and get him in space and have him take off and outrun everybody. So those are the three guys to watch out for. Kyren Lacy, which I already mentioned, Aaron Anderson, your favorite player of all time, and Chris Hilton. So that's what I look out for on the offensive side.
My word of advice, Mason Smith, you're too big to be giving your teammates shoulder bumps. Keep your feet on the ground. Just give high fives, dude.
Or yeah, we don't helmets, need you to be skipping around or jumping around.
Keep your feet on the ground, and it'll be fine.
Please, God. Please, God. All right, Mason, what are some other players around the country that you want people to be looking out for?
Yeah, so I think a big important one for this year is actually Donovan Edwards. He's currently, I guess you would say, backup running back for Michigan. In my eyes, they're more of a 1A, 1B. The thing about it is I think that Blake Corum's going to kind of start off a little slow this year. So I think Donovan Edwards is going to actually kind of have to come out and put up big minutes and make big plays for them out of the backfield this year, just because Blake Corum got hurt so late in the year last year. You never know how somebody's going to kind of come out after an injury like that. So I think people need to keep their eyes on Donovan Edwards, especially because Michigan is just so run heavy. So when you have two guys like that and one of them might be a little shaky to start the season and you can rely on the other one, I think that's what they'll do. So I'm keeping my eyes on Donovan Edwards right now.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. And kind of keeping in the Big Ten for running back, let's actually drive a little south and go to Ohio State. Travion Henderson is a guy you need to watch out for. He was hurt basically all year last year. If you remember a couple years ago, he was a freshman running back and really kind of blew up and had a phenomenal year. And then it just followed up. Everybody expected him to have a great year last year to be a part of that offense. And he just was hurt all year, never really could play. And so people aren't really thinking about him a lot. And so that's the guy to watch out for on Ohio State's roster at running back, especially as they're still trying to, like, they still haven't announced who their starting quarterback is, which everybody assumed that it would be Kyle McCord, but he hasn't won the job. And after at least the first scrimmage, Ryan Day said, nothing is solidified. They're pretty even, which is that a good thing? Because that means you have really great quarterback play, or is that a, hey, this guy needs to win the job and he's not winning it, so now we're getting a little nervous. But having a great back like Travion Henderson in your backfield to kind of take off the load, that's going to be super important for them. No matter who they start at quarterback, it's going to be a brand new starter. So you need to have that bell cow running back, and they have it. And so watch out for him this year.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And he was such a highly rated recruit coming in. And just so far, like the first 2 years, it's basically been injuries galore for him. So it'll be interesting to see how he's able to perform this year. And if he can stay healthy, I'm a believer in him. So if he stays healthy, I think he's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Do you have any other players you want to talk about? I know I have another one.
One more that I want to talk about is actually Devin Leary, surprisingly enough. So Devin Leary is a transfer from NC State. He was solid for NC State last year, and honestly, coming in this year for Kentucky, I mean, there's an argument that he's already top five quarterback in the SEC right now. I think the surprising thing is that you can really make an argument for him right now to that he's going to put up better numbers and be more productive than Will Levis was for Kentucky. Will Levis obviously was a better arm talent than Devin Leary is, but I think Devin Leary is going to be a better decision maker for Kentucky, and I think he's going to put them in a lot better positions than they were last year with Will Levis. So coming in, it's not going to surprise me one bit if he honestly just takes a bull by the horns and actually leads Kentucky to a really good season next year, because he was able to put up good numbers with NC State. Now, granted, you're going against a little bit weaker competition, and Kentucky at the same time has never like had that top end talent at quarterback. Like, you can make the argument that Will Levis was, but to me, Will Levis was just, he never hit his peak. So I do think that Devin Leary can come in and kind of surpass what Will Levis did for Kentucky. And if he can do that, man, they're going to end up having a lot better season than I think people are projecting.
How much better do you feel if Devin Leary is in Tuscaloosa?
I feel a lot better. Like, and it's not even close. If he was in Bama right now, I wouldn't be worried at all.
If he was at Bama, he'd be getting more Heisman hype. For sure. He was getting Heisman hype last year at NC State before they just really never took off. So, I mean, that's the quality of player that Kentucky was able to get. I mean, it's honestly crazy how you could make the argument that Kentucky got the best quarterback in the transfer portal in the SEC out of Florida, Bama, Georgia. Who else? I mean, Tennessee didn't need one. Ole Miss, I think, took one.
Oh, yeah. Auburn, too. They got Peyton Thorne.
Auburn. Arkansas didn't need one. Mississippi State didn't need one. I mean, Missouri. I mean, your main culprits would be Bama, Florida, that needed quarterbacks. And Kentucky outdid you at quarterback in the transfer portal. I mean, that's just insane.
So my question is, where would you rank him right now in SEC quarterbacks? Because I think he's definitely behind KJ Jefferson and definitely behind Jaden Daniels. But after that, man, like,
maybe behind Will Rogers.
Yeah, maybe. It kind of is wide open at that point for whoever is the 3 to 6 right now.
I mean, where do you put him ahead or behind Spencer Rattler?
Oof. I think because of how well Spencer Rattler ended last year, I might take Spencer Rattler, but I don't feel good about that. So
what about Joe Milton?
I think I would take him over Joe Milton. So I think I would probably have him right around
five or six.
Yeah, right around five. But I mean, coming
with
into
the opportunity. Yeah, I mean, with the opportunity to easily become third or second team all SEC.
Yeah, exactly. I think he has that type of talent in him. So yeah, I mean, like, I would start around five or six, but dude, there's a world where he can get up to second SEC, if we're being honest.
So for sure. Yeah, good call out there, Mason. Good call out. My next guy I want to talk about is actually wide receiver over in Austin. Everybody knows who Xavier Worthy is. You don't need to wonder who that is. You got a solid number one, and now you have a solid number two coming in from the transfer portal, coming from Athens of all places. I know Kirby was big last year before the season started and during the season talking about, oh yeah, we didn't have hardly any players or only two players transfer out. Well, you just had a big one transfer out, and that's AD Mitchell. The guy did nothing but catch the ball in big moments for the couple years that he was in Georgia. I think he was injured a good bit last year. Because he was injured, obviously, Stetson Bennett had his timing down with McConkey, so he really didn't get on the field a ton. Plus, you had the two-headed monster at tight end, so he really didn't get probably the touches that he wanted, which is probably why he ended up transferring out. And he goes to Texas, and he goes to be under Sark. And when Sark has two wide receivers that are super solid, he's deadly. And that's what I expect this year in Texas, and why I'm picking them to go in the playoff and in the championship game personally, is because it's year three. You have Xavier Worthy, you have Quinn Ewers, and then you just got, he would probably be wide receiver one on most any other team, but he has Xavier Worthy he's competing with. And I think they're going to complement each other so well. I think he's going to blow up and be a first round wide receiver this year. I mean, I think he could be that good in this offense. So I'd watch out for him. And with having Xavier Worthy and having another guy, man, it lets you be one-on-one more often, man. You don't have to worry about being the guy and have to fight double teams like you do all the time. And so I think he's going to frame up. I think he's going to explode.
Yeah, so the way I look at him is I kind of look at him in the John Metchie role. Like, I don't necessarily think that he could be a really good number one on a team. I think he's just an awesome number two. When you're out there as a focal point, it's definitely a lot more difficult for guys because you are getting more of the coverage floated your way. So I think that's kind of what he struggled with a little bit at Georgia. But when you're coming in and now he's the number two, he's definitely probably the best number two, or probably top two or three number twos in the nation right now at wide receiver. And that's kind of what John Metchie was. I never felt like John Metchie was the best number one for Alabama, but he was always an insanely great number two wide receiver. And so that's kind of where I see Mitchell too.
Yeah, I mean, if for Texas to be successful and to get where a lot of people think they can get, he has to have a huge year. He has to have a big year. And if he does, then you better watch out for him doing it doing it this year. Any other players for you, Mason? I might have one or two more.
Nobody I really want to go super deep on. I do want to kind of mention Cade Klubnik a little bit. I'm interested
to
see
the Clemson guy over here.
Yeah, my team. But I'm interested to see how he's going to develop under Garrett Riley. I mentioned it a little bit last week, so that's why I don't want to go too crazy with it. But yeah, the way that Garrett Riley was kind of able to develop Max Duggan makes me interested to see what he's going to do with Cade Klubnik. Especially because he was so highly touted coming out of high school. So yeah, that's another guy I'm interested in watching this year too.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to stick in the ACC and go to the team that's going to win the ACC, which is Florida State. And we're going to go with one of their transfers from they got from my beloved South Carolina Gamecocks. And that's Jaheim Bell, tight end. I mean, honestly, he's not just a tight end. He played everywhere. I mean, he played like running back and wide receiver and tight end for South Carolina last year. But he's listed as a tight end, Jaheim Bell, and he's a really, really good player. He kind of reminds me of a bigger Deebo Samuel in the NFL. I mean, he's just kind of like that Swiss Army knife guy. And so you can put him anywhere. He can do anything. And I think he's going to be a really nice piece for Florida State on offense this year. So watch out for Jaheim Bell.
Yeah. Look, You threw me off when you said Florida State was winning the ACC, so I can't rehash that again.
All right, I think that's all I got. So let's go ahead and move on to our Heisman draft, Mason. This is another one of your ideas. Why don't you go ahead and lay it on us, and we'll get going.
All right, so similar to last week, we picked four teams that were outside of the top 25 of the AP. So this draft, we're going to be picking four players that we think will make it or win the Heisman. And we're going to come up with a scoring system to go off of that. I haven't quite pinpointed that down yet. But yeah, that's it. That's basically the premise of it.
Right, and sweet. Well, I picked first last time.
Yeah.
So you get to pick first for the Heisman stuff. So who's, I mean, I think we all know who the number one pick in the draft is here. And if it's not, then
who? You know, I really want to overthink this. That's one of my greatest traits is that I overthink things. But I'm going to bring myself back down to earth, and I'm just going to take Caleb Williams right off the board. Make it really easy for myself.
Man, I'm so surprised right now. I'm thrown for a loop that the first pick was Caleb Williams. I think just from an odds perspective, it just makes sense for me to pick Jaden Daniels. I mean, he's number two on the list in the odds right now. And you know, if LSU is going to go where they need to go, like I think they're going to go, he's obviously going to be awesome and win the Heisman. So
such a homer.
listen, it's not my fault that our team actually has a quarterback that we can actually pick from for the Heisman. Okay.
Well, I appreciate you being a homer.
Anderson doesn't have another year of eligibility.
I appreciate you being a homer because you just made this 10 times easier for me. I'm going Quinn Ewers as my next pick. We've been hyping him up. And I think he's having a good year, so I'm taking him off the board with my second pick.
Okay, Quinn Ewers. Okay, that's respectable. I'm going to go Michael Penix as my next pick because he's going to have monster numbers over in the Pac-12. Michael Penix going down Heisman, dude.
Wow. Okay. I'm trying to decide at this point. This is where I was getting a little shaky with my picks. I don't know if – you know what? I'm going to do it. Give me Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm going off the board.
Wow. You're not going with Bo Nix, your guy? Wow. Man. Mason. Don't ruin my fourth pick. Mason. Okay. Well, I'm going to go Joe Milton because, you know, I picked Tennessee to win the East. And for them to win the East, he has to be awesome. So, Joe Milton.
Cameron, you fell
right. Go on my dark horse, dude.
You fell right into my trap. I set it up nicely for you, and you just like jumped headfirst into it. So, of course, I'm taking Bo Nix with my last pick.
Listen, I just thought I'd just let you have him. I mean, he's just sitting there in the open. I want to take him from you, man. I mean, I'm still burned and scorned from picking Bo Nix last year in our fantasy stuff. So I can't pick him. Like, he's just off limits to me.
Okay, I appreciate it. Well, thank you for your kindness.
Man, and now I got to pick a fourth. Where do I go on number four? Do I go with just one of the higher odds guys, Mason? Or do I just, you know, go super dark horse? Do I go? Do I dare?
You dare
pick Spencer? I dare pick Spencer Rattler?
Dare.
I don't know if I'm that ballsy. Okay.
Why not just say Carol Perkins? I mean, speak your truth, dude.
You know, I'm not going full homerism here, Mason, and picking a defensive player for the Heisman. Okay, I'm not that dumb. All right, and at least for my picks,
he'll be your second LSU player. It'll be great.
yeah you know, I really just don't like these odds. I mean, how is Sam Hartman so high? How is Cade Klubnik so high? I mean, like, Cade Klubnik at number five in the odds, like, what world do we live in? I just don't understand. I don't get it. You know, I'm just going to go with the odds, man. I'm going to go Jordan Travis.
Okay. Actually, don't hate that one for you.
The ACC champion that is going to be Jordan Travis.
I love that pick for you because it works out perfectly for me because he's obviously not going to be there.
He's going to be there over your ACC champion or fake champion in Cade Klubnik. I mean, you didn't even pick him, so why are you even saying anything?
Well, look, I have to be realistic with my picks, you know? They'll win the ACC, but he's not going to
Marvin Harrison Jr. is realistic. Yeah, very Bo Nix is realistic. Okay. If you say so, Mason. All right, so why don't you go ahead and give us the list of what we got?
All right, so my team coming out, I have Caleb Williams, Quinn Ewers, Marvin Harrison Jr., and Bo Nix. The only thing I don't love about it is I do have two Pac-12 guys, but I do like everybody on that list. I think they all have a really good shot of actually making it to the Heisman ceremony. In your list, you have Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Joe Milton, and Jordan Travis. You definitely spoke.
I'm going national here, Mason. Okay, I'm not sticking in one conference. Okay.
Fair.
You're going with two Pac-12 team players, dude. The Pac-12 is just like.
Are we missing the fact that
the Heisman voters hate the Pac-12?
Are we? Okay? Are we missing the fact that Jaden Daniels and Joe Milton both play in the SEC? Come on.
I'm going national, baby. Listen, what's going to happen, Mason, is that it's going to be down to the SEC championship game of LSU and Tennessee. Winner gets the Heisman and the SEC championship, okay? Okay. That's how it's going to be.
That would be crazy.
That would be the best SEC championship game of all time, okay?
If it happens, I will definitely give you your props.
Mark it down here. Mason, if this happens, I'm playing this clip. Okay. You believe me, I am playing this clip at the beginning of the podcast if this happens.
I'll let you take an even bigger victory lap than you did after LSU beat Bama last year.
I don't think it's going to be that big. Okay, let's calm down. But nothing will ever top that. Okay.
Okay. Fair enough.
I actually listened to that intro just for fun a couple weeks ago. I was like, let me just relive this.
Well, I still haven't listened to it, so I'm not putting myself through that.
Oh, poor Mason. So sad. Okay. Well, you know, we're close to an hour in, Mason, but we still have more to go. We're going to talk playoff, okay? The season is about here. We're not going to have time to talk about the playoff next week because we're going to be so busy talking about week one games, which is what it should be. All whole offseason, we can talk playoff. Once it gets down to the season, Mason, it's all about the games coming up. So let's just get it out of the way. Let's talk playoff. So tell me about some playoff dark horses, some teams that you like, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So I hate to keep beating a dead horse. So I won't go too crazy with it. But two dark horses that I do have are Clemson and Oregon. I've spoken on that a lot, so I won't go crazy with that one. Another one that I would like to throw out is USC. You've spoken about that also. I do think they're going to have a good chance to get into the playoffs. Like you said, like Caleb Williams is kind of hard to deny. Same thing with Lincoln Riley. If they get their defense right, that's where it will all start to fall into place for USC. So I do think that you kind of have to start off by mentioning USC in a conversation like this.
USC, man, really, I just don't see it. If all the hype is about Lincoln Riley, he's a great coach, he's still yet to win a playoff game. But let me actually ask this question to you, Mason. I think this is really interesting. Who wins a playoff game first, Lincoln Riley or Oklahoma?
I would go with Lincoln Riley. I don't think Oklahoma's really even close. I don't think Oklahoma's even close.
It makes it harder for them since they're going to the SEC for sure next year. Yeah. The good news for them is that it expands to 12, so maybe you get a little bit of help there. It's just Lincoln Riley just doesn't have a defense, man. He never does.
Okay, let's do this real quick. So would you take Alabama, Georgia, LSU? You would all say no for all those over Oklahoma right now. So then you say Texas over Oklahoma. I would take Texas over Oklahoma. Then you're looking at teams like Tennessee. Probably not. So that's what, five teams already that you're going to take over Oklahoma. And that's just off the top of the dome. So if you're saying 12-team playoff, all five of those teams are going to have a better shot at making it than Oklahoma. And then if you,
I mean, if we're talking this year, I mean, like, listen, okay. I get what you're saying. But we also need to flip it around to USC.
Yeah, I was about to say. So you got USC next.
Michigan. You got Ohio State. You got Penn State. Maybe they're fourth. Yeah. Maybe.
I think they would definitely slide into fourth.
Well, I mean, what about Wisconsin?
I was about to say, you have to start adding in. What about Nebraska? But then you have to start adding in Oregon and Washington on that also. So I would say,
who are you picking right now, Oregon or USC?
I mean, I've talked Oregon up like crazy, so I've got to live with Oregon and go with them.
So now we're talking about them being at five in the same place as Oklahoma. Yeah, so
but I do think it is a lot harder of a route to take in the SEC than it is the Big Ten. So
it for sure is harder, but I think if you get there from the SEC, I think you have a much better chance to win a game. The more time that comes by with Lincoln Riley, to me, I'm just not interested anymore. I'm just not a fan. I like, he's a great offensive mind. He's a great guy, but the dude has had the same defensive coordinator at both stops for like 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's tough to beat around, but I will say, like, I feel like USC is closer to getting it right than Oklahoma is. Like, feel like Oklahoma's not very close at all right now.
I think Lincoln Riley is going to make more playoffs than Oklahoma. I don't think that's a question. It's just, is he ever going to win a game in the playoffs is the question. And I don't know if he can, because the level of competition, because obviously his competition is going to go up once he joins the Big Ten next year. The competition is going to go up. And the brand of ball that those, like, I mean, okay, like, we aren't even talking about like Illinois and Iowa and like all these other teams that are just mid-tier Big Ten teams. But they play the style of ball that Utah plays.
Yeah.
And Utah dismantles him. So, like, I think that's the angle I'm getting at, is that he has always played in a conference in the Big 12 that, while he was there, was way more finesse than it is now. And he plays in the Pac-12, which most of them are finesse or aren't even good, or their programs and schools don't care about the product, and the teams that he does run into, like a Utah, they just get pushed around. And I think until he can prove otherwise, I think that's just going to continue, and they're just going to stay a middle tier product in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could say the same thing about Oklahoma joining the SEC. So it could even be a thing to where, like, hey, maybe neither one of them, maybe he leaves USC before we even get to an answer to this question.
Yeah.
Maybe he goes to the NFL in a couple of years. I don't know.
I think that's why it's more of an interesting question than I'm making it out to be, because they're both in a weird position right now where, like I said, I feel like USC is closer than Oklahoma is. But at the same time, if you start mapping it out, they are in a similar position in both conferences. It's all about defense with Lincoln, man. If he ever figures out defense, then
if he ever just gets a brain and decides, hey, I actually need to play defense to win something, then maybe
get a new defensive coordinator, Lincoln. Please. Good Lord.
Okay, so one of my dark horses, I think, and like, people have been kind of talking to them about dark horse, but I mean, it's kind of hard to pick them to even go to the playoff, because the other two teams that's in their conference, that's Penn State. I mean, obviously I have Michigan in my playoff, but Penn State is such a solid team. The question on Penn State all comes down to quarterback. They have Drew Aller coming in, first year starter. He was riding the bench behind Sean Clifford. It's his time to take the reins and to play. He's got the physical ability, but is he actually going to be able to do it? They play Michigan and Ohio State this year. They could have a great season and still lose to those two and go 10-2, which is still a good season. But if they upset one of those teams there and just lose to one and go 11-1, they're right there at the doorstep with a good enough resume to make the playoff. And they have a defense good enough. They have a solid offensive line, two stud running backs. And if And if Drew Aller can get it together at quarterback, they're going to be a really dangerous team.
Yeah, so I think that they have a better chance of beating Ohio State this year than they do Michigan. I think the problem with them playing against Michigan is that they play too similar of a style of offense. they're both very run heavy. Like you said, Penn State, they're bringing in a new quarterback this year, so they're going to have to rely a lot on Nick Singleton. And he was awesome last year. So coming in as a sophomore this year, like, I expect him to make a jump. So that's why I think between the two, they're going to have a better chance of beating Ohio State than Michigan. But with that being said, man, it's just going to be really hard for them to pull out both of those games. But that's why they're a dark horse, because if they do, then they're definitely going to be in the playoffs. And if they could drop one, and they could probably still possibly make some noise for the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I like Penn State this year.
Yeah, and here's how their schedule sets up. they play and host West Virginia in week one. Then they play Delaware. Then they go on the road to Illinois. They host Iowa. They go to Northwestern. They host UMass. And then here's the first one of the big games. They go to Ohio State this year in October. Then they host Indiana. They go to Maryland. And then they get to host Michigan this year. Then they get to host Rutgers. And then they finish it out on the road at Michigan State. So the good news for them is that they aren't in a weird scheduling thing like Auburn is, to where they have their two toughest games at home both years, and then the next year they're both on the road. They do have it flipping, which is nice. I would hate, like, obviously it's really nice when you have both of those at home, but it really sucks when you have both of those on the road. So yeah, I mean, I'm with you in that, yeah, Penn State and Michigan definitely play the same brand of ball. And if you watched the game last year, I mean, Michigan just torched them up the middle and just ran all over them. I think Penn State does improve on the run defense front. And the good news for them when it comes to Michigan is that you have all the way to mid-November to figure things out on that end. The hard game is obviously going to be at Ohio State, because Ohio State really just had their number a lot. But they do play two different styles of offense, and part of that's just going to depend, okay, how Ohio State's quarterback situation? Ohio State and Penn State do have some question marks there on how quarterback's going to play. But, yeah, I mean, it is going to be hard for them to run the table and go undefeated, obviously, and win the playoff. I think their best chance to win the conference is, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan just kind of eating each other and cannibalizing themselves, and then somehow winning a tiebreaker or something like that. I think that's really the only way that's going to happen.
You know how incredible it would be if they're both undefeated going into that game, Penn State, Michigan State? That environment, that's definitely going to be their wideout game this year. I don't think there's really a question about it. That would be incredible, dude. I'm daydreaming about that right now.
Let's hope and pray. The good news is they have Iowa at home and don't have to go to freaking Iowa to play. It's like, yeah, a death trap, dude.
Get out of here. Penn State could put up 12 points on Iowa and still win the game.
12 points. All right, what else you got? Any other dark horses you wanted to talk about?
Man,
Iowa Hawkeyes, man. Come on.
Get out of here. I'm trying to look through lists, man, to just try and find somebody kind of off the board who I think could actually really be a dark horse instead of like the top 10 teams that everybody's talking about right now. One team that kind of jumps out is Kansas State. You have Will Howard coming back. They did win the Big 12 last year. But you lose Deuce Vaughn, you lose a couple other guys. It's going to be tough for them. I will say they do have, I think it's 6 or 7 seniors starting right now for them on the offensive side. So when you have that type of veteran kind of leadership coming back after you just won the Big 12, there is a potential for you to kind of make some noise this year. But I do think it's going to be really hard for them to kind of take out Texas. Like, I think because they play Texas this year, right? If I'm not mistaken, I think they do. Because at that
point, I believe they do.
If you're already playing Texas, you're going to have to beat them twice, because you'll have to beat them in the regular season, and then you'll probably have to turn around and also beat them in the championship game. So dark horses this year are a little shaky for me because it just feels like everybody's kind of locked in on the top. Like you have Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, USC, Texas, LSU, Clemson, Florida State, Penn State, Oregon, maybe Washington, maybe Notre Dame. But at that point, it's just kind of like everything has to be perfect for a team to kind of make that run. And I don't know if I'm really seeing that this year. But it happens every year.
I mean,
so I'm sure I'm going to be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this year is different than a lot of other years in that there's not really a clear-cut favorite.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, everybody says Georgia or Michigan. But, I mean, even still, like, it's not – to me, at least, it's not – like, I don't care what the betting market says. There's really not, like, this huge drop-off between Georgia and Michigan and everybody else. Like you said, I mean, you have Georgia, you have Bama, Ohio State, Michigan, LSU – I mean, even USC is there, Clemson's there, Florida State's there, Penn State's a possibility, Texas is a possibility, Notre Dame, Tennessee, Oregon, Washington. I mean, that's what, like 15 teams that I just named or whatever it is. And those are all teams that, as we're sitting here, the 22nd of August, I don't think like we would be too surprised. Like there would be a little bit of you know, surprise that Penn State makes it, or we'd be maybe a little surprised if Tennessee makes it, right? Or Oregon or whatever. But like, it's not like TCU last year where they just came out of nowhere and they made the playoff because like we obviously knew who the top three was. It's just we didn't know who the fourth was. They end up making the championship game. You know, it's not like some of these other years is like, oh, they made it in? Really? There's not really like, it's not like, hey, we have our clear 4-5. And then there are some of these other teams that are under them that, you know, maybe they could get in. They are definitely a dark horse. This year, it's just, it's wide open, it feels like. And I think it's going to make the season really good. But it makes it hard to be like, okay, who's making the playoff? Who can we really call a dark horse? I mean, in most other years, if I'm looking at the odds market, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You get to Texas, and they're 10th on the list.
Yeah, gosh.
No one is going to be surprised that they make it.
That's the thing. You could tell me any realistic combination, any four-team combination of the top 15 that you just named off, and I would believe what you said is true for who's going to make the playoff. Like any realistic combination. But that, like you said, it's just so deep this year, and it's really hard to kind of pinpoint a dark horse because that dark horse is going to have to jump over 15 teams to get to where they want to be for the playoffs. So
yeah, I mean, if we're looking at other dark horses besides that really top list, I mean, we're thinking looking at Wisconsin, Ole Miss, North Carolina. I mean, you mentioned Kansas State, UCLA, Miami, Oregon State. I mean, I'm just kind of looking at the odds rankings here, not even like the top 25, just the odds. And those are the teams that are kind of next up in that group. I mean, Texas A&M's up there for some reason. Oklahoma's there. Utah's there. But, I mean, you get to, like, Iowa, Oregon State, South Carolina, Texas Tech. Even Auburn's on this list. So, I mean, it's just once you get down to Washington, everybody else is just like, hey, you're just throwing darts on the board to see what sticks.
Yeah, for sure.
Washington and up. So you got Washington, Oregon, Tennessee, Notre Dame, Texas, Penn State, Florida State, Clemson, USC, LSU, Michigan, Ohio State, Bama, Georgia. Those are your core teams that you're realistically picking from for the playoff this year. Anybody outside of that, you have to consider a dark horse. And I don't think either one of us is really comfortable picking any of those teams as being a dark horse.
And the other thing about it is like every team that you could consider a dark horse has huge hurdles to get over. Like with Wisconsin, like you have to get through Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. With Utah, you have to get through USC, Oregon, Washington. And I like just going down the list, man, like it feels like every conference has like three teams that you feel really good about their chances of making the playoffs, and everybody behind that has to get through the big dogs to get there. And like you said, it's just kind of – it's a hard thing to kind of project.
Yeah, I mean, out of all of those teams that are below the Washington line, the only team that's going to have the easiest path to get there is going to be North Carolina because they just play Clemson. Who knows how good Miami's going to be? You beat Clemson, are you rematching them or are you playing Florida State?
Exactly.
I mean, you're probably going to have to beat one of those two teams to win the conference. So you beat Clemson, and then you either play them again or you beat Florida State in the conference championship game and you're in. That would be kind of the that North Carolina would be the only TCU team that would legit surprise me. That would be a legit dark horse.
And that's,
I mean, looking at their odds, they're at plus 10,000, plus 12,000, plus 1250. I mean, those are the kind of odds you're looking at for North Carolina to win the national championship.
And that's the thing. They basically have to win the SEC or the ACC if they want to make it into the playoffs. And honestly, like, it's almost going to be kind of hard for, like, it feels like we're kind of getting to this world where even if they're a one-loss ACC champion, you're kind of on that bubble just because of everybody else that's in front of you. I still think you have a good chance of getting in. But like you said, like, it's, you have to win the ACC if you're wanting to get in, if you're North Carolina.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if you're North Carolina and you have one loss as ACC champ, you better be hoping and praying that the Pac-12 completely cannibalized itself, because you're not getting in if they didn't. You're hoping for that. And you're hoping there's not a legit case for two from Big Ten or two from SEC.
Exactly.
Because that's what you're going to be fighting against.
Yeah, the three from the Big Ten, they have to cannibalize each other. And the three from the SEC, they have to cannibalize each other too. Like, it all has to work out perfectly for you if you're North Carolina and you're winning the ACC.
No room for error there. So that's kind of a brief look that we had there. So we have our second draft that we got going on here. Well, why don't you give this one to us, Mason?
All right. So this one, again, we're going to be picking four teams that we think are going to make and possibly win the college football playoffs. So scoring is going to be, you get 1 point if your team gets in, you get 2 points if they make it to the championship game, and you get 4 points if that team wins the championship game. And like I said, four picks. And I had first pick in the last draft, so it wraps back around to you. First pick for this draft.
Yeah, it's my turn. Let's go. Yeah, you know where I'm going. It's going with the maize and blue, the Michigan Wolverines, number one pick, because they're going to win the championship this year, guys. They're winning it. Just get used to it. Doesn't matter if Jim Harbaugh is doing a self-imposed three-game suspension, because they play the school of the deaf and then the school of the blind and then – you know, whoever else is on that list, you know, but Michigan all the way.
Well, thankfully you just threw me a lob and made it easy for me. So I'm just going to take the cakewalk pick and take Georgia.
Georgia's not even going to win their division, Mason. Okay. Not even going to win their division.
You keep saying that and we'll see what happens.
My number two pick is going to be my other half of the national championship game. That's going to be Texas. Okay. Michigan, Texas.
Man, Cam, I don't love that, actually. I wish you would have left him on the board for me.
I'm going for points, Mason. Like, I'm going all in on winning this thing. So I have my national championship game together. And so now I'll let you have the scraps.
You made this really difficult for me with that pick. You know what? I'm going to go opposite of you, and I'm going to actually take Ohio State.
Ohio State. Okay. You're getting a little ballsy there with Ohio State pick. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that just leaves like the other teams that I have going to the playoff on here anyways, Mason. So I really appreciate that. And that's obviously going to be my homer pick of LSU because they're making the playoffs. So,
well, you know what? Because you did that, I will go homer also and take Bama.
Perfect, dude. This is just lining up perfectly for me, Mason. It's lining up perfectly for me. So now I'm down to my last pick. And this is honest. So thankfully, you haven't had to make me make a hard decision on who, because you didn't pick one of the teams I was going to pick in my playoffs. So now I'm on my fourth spot. And this is the one that I'm not really too sure where I want to go yet. Whenever I just come down to who I'm predicting for the playoff, I mean, I could go Florida State, which I think is going to be the ACC, but I could also go with your, like, darlings of Oregon, you know? Oh, man, it's going to be one of those two, I think. I think I'm going to go – oh, this is hard. I think Florida State has the easier path. Maybe they don't.
You have a chance to make this really difficult for me. I'm just letting you know that.
And it's only going to be difficult for you if I pick Oregon.
No.
Do I pick Florida State? Do I pick Oregon? Or do I go to SEC and go Tennessee? Definitely not picking USC. They're not even making sniff in the playoffs. I think I'm going to go with... I'm thinking I'm going to go with Oregon.
Oh, thank you, Cameron. Okay, I'm going Clemson.
You didn't even have to worry. Gosh. I was never picking them.
No.
Because they're not even winning their conference.
About. What I was worried about is that you were going to pick Florida State, and then I was going to have to pick between Clemson and Oregon. That would have broken my heart. Okay, that would have been really tough. Honestly, I don't know what I would have done. So thankfully, you made the decision. You
mentioned
for me.
That. Now that you mentioned that, and now that you've written it down, we're just so before we actually get into our legit picks, we did a draft, so obviously we can't draft each other's teams, right? So why don't you go ahead and give us this list first, and then we're going to give us our actual playoff predictions, okay?
All right, so my list, I ended up with Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson. And for your list, you took Michigan, Texas, LSU, and Oregon. I really like both those lists, if we're being honest with each other. I think yours a little bit better than mine, but I like them both.
I mean, what can I say, Mason? I mean, I just have a knack for this thing, okay? Look. No, being able to pick first and basically I basically picked the three teams that I'm pretty confident are going to make it. And I'm just real iffy on that fourth.
Yeah.
And the fourth for me, it's obviously down to what I said. It's obviously down to me. It's down to Florida State and Oregon, because I think Florida State's better than Clemson. I think they win the conference because I think their offense is going to be better. And I think their defense is just as good. Their quarterback play is going to be better. Like, that's just what I think. Obviously, we disagree on part of that. But picking between Oregon and Florida State, I'm sitting here thinking schedule. And the thing about Florida State is that I don't know if they have a harder schedule than Oregon. The thing that doesn't help them, though, is that they're starting off the year with a loss because they're losing to LSU week one. You know, I know we aren't doing our preview for week one, but you can go ahead and just bank it like I'm picking LSU to beat Florida State Sunday night. So
is this breaking news here?
It's breaking news, and everybody is so shocked and surprised. But I mean, like, let's just look at their schedule real quick. I mean, they start off with LSU, then they play Southern Miss, then Boston College, and then they play Clemson. So like, they have the opportunity to start off the year 2-2 and they're out. Or they start off the year 3-1, whether that loss is to LSU or whether it's to Clemson, and then there's no room for error. So then after that, after Clemson, you play Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Duke, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, Miami, North Alabama, and Florida. Not like the hardest schedule in the world. It's just super tough at the start. And then you're probably playing Clemson again in the ACC championship game. And depending on how the game turned out, the first time, I mean, you know, we don't know what that's really going to look like, or even if it's maybe another team that just came out of the ACC out of nowhere, like a North Carolina or something like that. If we look at Oregon's schedule, I mean, we're looking at Portland State. They go to Texas Tech, which is pretty sneaky. I mean, you better really watch out for that. Hawaii, Colorado, Stanford. They have the hard game against and at Washington. They play Washington State. They go to Utah, California. They host USC. They have Arizona State, and they host Oregon State. The schedule is harder for Oregon, but I just think they're better than the rest of the teams in the Pac-12. Whereas I was like, obviously I think Florida State is better than Clemson, but I'm not as confident on that as I am with Oregon and the rest of the pack. And I think because Oregon has such a tough schedule, they have room for error and losing a game. Whereas Florida State, it's a little bit more iffy.
Yeah, especially like dropping that first game against LSU. That makes it a lot more difficult for them than it does Oregon, in my opinion.
So I I'm tentatively going with my playoff being Michigan, LSU, Texas, and Oregon, and my championship game being Texas and Michigan. That's what I'm thinking right now. You could easily flip out Oregon and Florida State. I think it'd be really interesting if it ends up being Florida State LSU in the playoff game. I think that'd be really interesting for them to start off the year and then kind of end the year against each other. But that's what I'm thinking. It's going to be one of those two. Flip a coin for me. I don't know.
So I love our homerism because obviously you're picking LSU for your playoffs. Obviously I'm picking Bama for mine, but we do have two of the same. So I do have Michigan and Texas locked into mine. I also have Bama. But again, like you said, like I'm in the same boat as you. Like I could take Oregon. I could take Clemson. I kind of like Ohio State this year a little bit, but I don't know if you'll get two Big Ten teams in. I'd be kind of surprised if you got two SEC teams in.
Yeah, so I want to ask you about that. You have Bama and Georgia in yours. Do you have Bama or Georgia winning the conference?
Bama.
So you think Georgia's going to make it in with conference with their schedule?
No, I have Michigan, Texas, and Bama right now as my three that I have locked
okay.
in.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, because I think it's going to be a tough year to be able to get two teams from a certain conference in. So, like, I do think it'll be hard for Michigan and Ohio State or Penn State to make it. Same thing with SEC. Like, I don't see two of Georgia, Bama, and LSU making it.
I think the hardest team to make it in the SEC as, like, the at-large team is Georgia because their schedule so is soft by SEC standards. It just is.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see a world where Bama and LSU get in just because the West is stacked and because Bama plays Texas and LSU plays Florida State in the out of conference. Georgia doesn't play anybody. So if they drop a game in the SEC championship game to LSU or to Bama, I think they get jumped by if LSU or Bama makes the SEC championship game undefeated and the other one is sitting out with just one loss. That one lost team is jumping Georgia.
Yeah, no,
and Georgia's
like,
out.
Especially so. Let's say the scenario. Let's say LSU beats Alabama in the regular season. LSU is Alabama's only loss for the entire season. And then, I messed it up. Anyways, whatever. So let's say it's just all three of them have one loss. I think it would be Bama and LSU getting the bump over Georgia in the playoffs. I think Georgia would be left out.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, to me, the only way Georgia makes it in this year is by going undefeated and win the conference.
Yeah.
Unless just madness ensues, obviously, and LSU and Alabama have a couple losses and Tennessee has a couple losses and Georgia's just there with one loss. But it just has to do with schedule. I just don't think Georgia's schedule is up to par to make it as an at-large without winning the conference this year.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The way I look at it for my fourth team is I really think that it comes down to Clemson and Oregon for me, of course. I think I give the nod to Clemson, if we're being honest, over Oregon, because I do kind of have that fear in the back of my head of the Pac-12 kind of, like we've been saying, cannibalizing each other. I feel like Clemson's road is just a smidge easier than Oregon's. For Clemson, it's basically like you get through Florida State in week four and don't lose your mind against South Carolina at the end of the season, and you're probably
forget Notre Dame.
And
Notre Dame this year.
but yeah, so I think for me, I would go Michigan, Texas, Alabama, Clemson as my four.
Who's in the championship?
Gosh, I think I would go with Bama and Michigan.
And who wins it?
Bama, dude. I'm a homer. You can't pass it up.
You went full homerism. I kind of stepped back a little bit.
Full homerism. I trust the goat.
So at least have Michigan go to the championship game. They finally get over the hump and make it there.
The thing that worries me, though, is the whole Texas-Bama game week two. That does scare me a little bit. Not necessarily.
Because you don't have a quarterback.
Well, not necessarily individually for Alabama or Texas. It just... In the bigger picture of things, if I do think that both of them can survive one loss to each other. So like, let's just say Texas does go in and beat Alabama. Alabama can still go out and win the SEC and they'll get into the playoffs. And I think the same thing can be said about Texas, is they can drop that game to Bama, still win the Big 12, and probably still make the playoffs at that point. But obviously both with one loss.
Yeah, I mean, they would have to run the table, both teams. Yeah. No room for error.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard. I mean, with how the Big 12 has been recently and how good the SEC West is, I mean, that's going to be hard to do.
Yeah.
Whoever loses that game is in a rough spot the rest of the year. And the same can be said for LSU, Florida State.
I mean, yeah, for sure.
All four of those teams are in the same boat. You got to win your game early. And if you don't, well, you better run the table if you want to make it to the playoff.
Yep. But that's just why I love out-of-conference games, dude. It makes it so much more interesting for everybody. And each team can lose that game, still run the table, win their conference, and get into the playoffs. And we're still getting a great game at the beginning of the season.
Love it. Freaking Georgia, take a page out of our playbook and don't cancel your game with Oklahoma, okay? Yeah. Freaking idiots. Stupid. Georgia. All right. Well, I think that's all we got, Mason. Is there anything else you want to go over real quick before we leave the people before week zero?
Nick Saban, if you would just like to name a starter for me, that'd be pretty cool. I would appreciate it. So that way I can just enjoy the next week and a half. That would be great.
Well, we appreciate you guys for listening, and we will catch you guys next week for our week one preview. It's finally here, guys. Football is coming in about a week and a half. We can't wait for it, and we hope you tune in next week for our picks, previews for week one of the college football season.